If you know anything about the history of the subject and whatever's behind it, it is not logical at all.
Yeah.
At all, at all, at all. It doesn't do anything in any kind of logical order that we would expect, ever.
Ladies and gentlemen, beloved of America!
It's one of those inconclusive things where you can have 500 cameras on something and people still aren't going to care. I mean, people that determine how we're supposed to think about things, I mean, the academia and pundits and scientists and the media, if they don't believe it and they don't care, nobody else is going to care because nobody's put that stamp on it and says, this is important, you should pay attention to it.
I'm calling for a good flap, that's all.
I will get right behind you with that one and vote the same.
Like a sustained one, you know, good 6 months, just like that would be fine. That would do something, maybe.
We need more people sitting out there making out in cars and going, "Gah!" down the road.
That's always a good thing. You're, you know, a noted author on the 2012 theory. Update your resume.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 6. I hope all the awesome BOA Audio listeners out there had a fantastic New Year's as well as holiday season. Now let's kick off the first BOA Audio of 2012. It is time once again for another traditional edition of the program as we close the book on 2011 and peer into the abyss of 2012 with our old pal Greg Bishop. As you can imagine, we're going to be looking back at the events of the past year with a focus on ufology. We're going to discuss the Jerusalem UFO sighting, the White House disclosure petitions, the Phil Imbrogno imbroglio, the passing of Bud Hopkins and Gabe Valdez, Annie Jacobson's Area 51 book, which became a bestseller, the NASA orbs revelation, and a handful of other weird happenings from 2011. And if you're a longtime listener of the program, you're familiar with our conversations with Greg Bishop, so it should be no surprise to you that we're going to journey down a wealth of side roads as we really ponder the big picture nature of UFOs, disclosure, and UFO research. We don't just get tied down to the specifics of these stories. We look at what they mean to the UFO enigma as a whole. Plus, as we do every year, we're going to pontificate on the ebb and flow of various paranormal genres as we enter a whole new year of esoterica. Altogether, it is a level-headed assessment of where we stand at the beginning of 2012 with regards to unlocking the UFO phenomenon and the current state of the paranormal community as a whole, with the brutally honest, thoughtful, and always thought-provoking Greg Bishop. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Greg Bishop, allow me to provide you with a little background on him. In 1991, Greg Bishop co-founded the magazine entitled The Excluded Middle. His writing has appeared in the LA Weekly, 40 and Times, UFO Magazine, and Magical Blend, among others, and in the book-length anthologies Conspiracy in Cyberculture, Zen and the Art of the Close Encounters, Kooks, and You Are Being Lied To. In 2005, his book Project Beta was an attempt to set the record straight on the Paul Benowitz disinformation saga. His third and newest title, Weird California, was published in March of 2006, and his podcast, Radio Mysterioso, can be heard live Sundays from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time, at www.killradio.org, and after the program, you can pick up the MP3s and streaming audio of the program at radiomysterioso.com. And you spell that RadioMysterioso.com, or just hop on over to Banal of America and pick up the linkage. And I should also mention and highly recommend that folks head on over to radiomysterioso.com and pick up the 1-1-12 edition of the program, the New Year's Day episode, which featured me on the show only a handful of days before we taped this edition of BOA Audio, kind of serves as the unofficial part one of our year in review. So if you want to hear even more of the conversation that you're going to hear on this installment of the program, pick up the January 1st, 2012 edition of Radio Misterioso for a whole bunch more conversation between me and Greg on 2011 and 2012. With all that said, let's get down to business, my friends, and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on January 4th, 2012. Greg Bishop joins us for a discussion on ufology in 2011 and where things are headed in the new year on BOA Audio Season 6. Ladies and gentlemen, 2011 has ended. It is now 2012. And of course, that means only one thing, our annual year in review. I guess you could call it a bitch fest at this point. A year in review bitch fest. And with me, this is the fourth year you've done this. Unfortunately, our other good buddy, Nick Redfern, couldn't make it. He's traveling with his family and stuff. He's seeing family. He puts family above UFOs, folks. I don't know what that's all about, but...
What?
I know. Come on. So
work.
On the other hand, of course, here for the fourth year now of recappery, if that's even a word, which I'm sure it isn't, is our longtime buddy still going for that most appearances record. I think you hold it, actually, yeah, and adding on to it.
Really? I couldn't believe it. I haven't been on all year, and I still hold it. Amazing.
Baseball special.
Yeah.
It's like the steroids of our tally. And he really needs no introduction. Of course, he's the author of Project Beta. He's the host of the outstanding program Radio Misterioso, which I was actually just on like 3 days ago. And he is one of the original UFO mystics. And check that out at ufomystic.com. Of course, he's the illustrious Greg Bishop. What's up, buddy?
Well, I think we still have reams of stuff to talk about, even though we talked a couple nights ago. I just posted that last night, if you saw.
Yeah, people should go and check that out, because it was we taped it on New Year's night, the first day of the year, and I was full of piss and vinegar about the new year and excited. I'm still excited, but, you know, the excitement wanes.
You're so much more slick on your show, because when I was listening back to the show, both of us were kind of thinking ahead of ourselves and going, and also there's the, and well, you know what I'm saying, and, you know, and I cut a few of those out so we sound a little bit more professional.
Oh, that's nice of you.
I did it for you, too.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Well, hopefully we'll get into the same rhythm here, you know, and really
listen
just...
Listen to that. We talk shop about paranormal podcasting, which I guess you don't hear too much.
Yeah, we do that. We talk about all kinds of stuff. So
yeah.
It was quite. I was really happy with the conversation. I was psyched afterwards. So
anyway, on with this one.
Yes, on to step two, I guess you could say, or part two, or part due. And that's the year in review here, the UFO year in review. And I've sort of broken down the thing again this year like I did last year, where I just picked one big story from a bunch of different sort of tent poles instead of going chronologically, because we'd end up just stumbling over the same thing. I guess we should talk first a little bit about sort of the controversy that was engendered after the 2010 year in review, because I have a feeling it's you know, at the risk of freaking people out, it's going to be probably a little bit more of the same sort of mentality, because the year didn't develop anything particularly awesome for ufology, really. You know, it was another year of document releases in the UK and, you know, random UFO sightings that don't add up to much and disclosure pushes that don't really develop into anything, and the same stories you hear all the time. So people were very, you know, irate about the episode last year. Not really, but only a handful of people, but they seemed like they thought we were too cynical about the subject, which I don't really see. You know, if anything, we really want this thing proven more than anybody. You know, we're diehard really pushing for the answer. So to see the constant malaise and apathy of UFO research, that's what really, you know, I think engenders the cynicism in us.
Yeah, well, I think that people that consume the information are a little bit more hopeful than people that try to produce the information. And though I haven't really done too much of that in the last couple of years, except for doing some interviews and very, very light research, if you like heavy into it for like what, since 92 or 93, I've been heavy into it since I was a kid, but you know, like writing about it and doing the magazine and all that, and you go at it for what, 10, 15 more years, or somebody like Jim Moseley who's been going at it for like what, 50, 60 years, And he feels exactly the same way. I think the point I'm making is that if you are really looking and really talking to people and really, you know, if you make more than a kind of a reading a bunch of books effort, you get cynical a lot quicker, I think. Unless you have some, like, rigid belief system where you, you know, you and you've got some kind of quixotic thing where I'm going to find the answer and
right,
it's going
right.
to be... You know, if you got that, then, you know, I guess you're just going on belief or something like that. But I'm probably more going on hope than belief. I mean, I think that more different ideas and newer ideas and forgotten ones, maybe, is probably the most important thing. Ones that don't get too much airplay are the ones that give me hope. But, you know, another sighting doesn't give me hope. Somebody like last year fighting with Emma Woods and David Jacobs, both Nick and I said, well, we don't care. Well, we don't. We don't really care about that. I'm sorry that Emma Woods was, you know, traumatized. I don't know what kind of person she is. I'm sorry that David Jacobs is kind of a doofus in the way he does his research or appears to be. You know, that's too bad. But the reason I don't care is because, and I'm going to keep coming back to this. One time I asked Jacques Vallée, and I've said this before. I've met him, I think, three times. And the last time I met him, a few years ago, he had stopped doing UFO stuff, and I asked him why. And he said it's because he wasn't learning anything anymore. That's what it seems like. If you've been into it for a long time and you've really exposed yourself to as many sources of information as possible and theories and researchers, good and bad, and you get to the point where there's, you know, nothing, you're not really much further than where you started, and nobody's telling you anything new, then, well, how should you feel? You know, I'd like to hear a rebuttal to that from somebody that's more hopeful, but that's how I feel. I, like you said, I still have hope for the subject, and I'm still interested in it, but I find, you know, whenever somebody comes up with something new, it's something that's, it's not new to me, and it's not new to, it's probably not new to you, it's not new to even people like Stan Friedman and Kevin Randall and people like that who have been around forever and, like, really had their, you know, gotten their hands dirty many, many times doing their research and digging through documents and interviewing people and all that. You know, they think it's solved, I guess. They think it's extraterrestrials, but...
Well, the thing is, too...
But, you know, I'm sure if they heard another sighting report, they'd throw up. They're sick of that stuff.
I know, I certainly am. Well, I think the...
you know, the thing about Emma Woods, I don't think that's going to change ufology. It's just going to, you know, something completely out of left field is going to change the abduction thing. I don't know what that is. I really don't, but, you know, a researcher... screwing around with a abductee and the abductee having mental problems and all that and being exacerbated maybe by the abduction researcher, I don't think that's going to change the field because the field doesn't really police itself. And even if it did, it has to be policed from the outside for anything to make a difference. And nobody from the outside of the field really cares about it except for to the point where they can make movies out of it.
There you go. Wow, that was a long... I like that.
Fair. Now I've explained why I still care, although I can sound like I don't. It depends on what you bring up and what the subject is and what we're talking about.
Right, right. Well, I think the thing is, too, is that it's like... And I know this is how I feel. I think you're probably the same way. We're still fascinated and tremendously intrigued and delighted by the phenomenon. It's the pursuit of the answer to the phenomenon which has become the tedious part.
Yeah, because people do the same thing over and over expecting a different result and they don't get it. And I'm past the thing where reading accounts of sightings excite me. I don't really care about that stuff. I like to read really strange ones, like the ones you see on Albert Rosales's humanoid catalog site. What's it called? Catalog of Humanoid Reports, I think. I can't remember the name of the site. That one I like reading because he doesn't filter the weird ones. He puts them in there. You know, saw things standing in yard with glowing head, jumped over hedge. It's like, what? Really? You know, I don't know if it's going to help solve anything, but that's a great story.
Yeah.
But, you know, another wave of sightings where a bunch of people see stuff and then the Air Force says it was nothing. I don't care. It doesn't change anything. It hasn't and it's not going to. Something else is going to change it.
Right, right. Well, that brings me, well, this is a great segue, actually, because the first thing I have on the list is the sighting of the year. And this is, I guess it would be the sighting of the year, because I looked at a couple of top 10 lists where I sort of saw these things, and on one of them, it was overall all paranormal, and this was listed as the top paranormal story of the year, which I was surprised by, and the other one was just UFO stories. I think it had a third. But I'll ask you, I'll do you a little pop quiz, see how well you know this, so remember it. What do you think was the big UFO sighting this year?
Yeah, I wouldn't know. I mean,
I know.
You pointed me to that orbs thing with the NASA thing, but that wasn't really a sign.
Nobody even mentioned that anywhere. That
was recorded on video. I thought that was fascinating. I really don't know what the big sighting was. Thing with the protesters, because that was probably a drone. But anyway, what was it?
Well, part of the reason why I put you on the spot like that was to sort of prove a point in a way also, that the sightings are really... I had to look for the UFO sighting of the year, because I didn't know what it was either.
In somebody's opinion, anyway.
Right, right. It was this Jerusalem one. Do you remember the Jerusalem one from January?
I asked about that, and it looked great at first, and then it looked really fake and terrible, and, you know, it was just, and then it looked a little bit better, and, it's one of those inconclusive things, where you can have 500 cameras on something, and people still aren't going to care. I mean, people that determine how we're supposed to think about things. You mean the academia and pundits and scientists and the media. If they don't believe it and they don't care, nobody else is going to care, because nobody's put that stamp on it and says this is important. You should pay attention to it.
Right. It wasn't a game changer.
No, I don't think. Yeah, like you said, I think on my show the game changer is going to be mass sighting over a highly populated first world, or even maybe second world city or second tier city, for more than a few minutes with, tons of video documentary evidence, including news cameras out there filming the thing at length. That might be a game changer, but
right.
I don't think that's going to happen.
And to the best of my knowledge, how was the Jerusalem in that scale? It sounds close when you describe it. I don't remember it that well. It was over a fairly populated city, I presume, right? Jerusalem was probably.
But it was.
It wasn't a foreign country.
I don't know much about it, because all I read was what I told you. I mean, at first it seemed very interesting. Then it very quickly devolved into the camera footage did not match up exactly, and some stuff was edited, and somebody edited in audio of themselves talking over it after the fact, and it's like,
what?
What's going on here? I think somebody was at one of the conferences showing video or stills from these videos showing like shapes inside the lights, which to me look like lens problems and, cheap lenses that have aberrations in them. But, it's so maddeningly unclear as to what it is, except for some bright lights that do some weird things. No, when I said over a large city with lots of video cameras, including the news and all that, I mean daylight.
Ah, okay. See, that's
not some light where you can't see what the thing is, no matter how they move.
Yeah, we don't want a bright light in the dark sky. We want a craft
solid
in the clear sky.
Mexico City stuff. I mean, even that didn't change the game. Really, it got a lot of people interested, but it didn't make anybody that's important and a really good thinker really concentrate on this and champion the cause. Because I don't think I don't know what's going to change it. I think an incredibly huge kick to the head.
It's going to happen.
I only think it would change it. I don't know what that is besides
what we said earlier. Yeah,
or two, the Whitley Strieber idea of like bottom up. People all over the world and from all kinds of different social strata and races and all that, all having an experience over a period of time that is, kind of unequivocal. And then that changes their lives, and that might be the game changer. And it'll come out of left field. I mean, it's like literally kind of a backdoor way for the phenomenon to reveal itself. And I think that might be one way, which is admittedly, kind of far-fetched, but the nature of the consciousness behind it, or whatever intelligence is behind it, I think that might be a way it would do it. completely from the bottom up, completely democratically, and in a way that nobody really expects, as we expect everything to come, you know, head on right in front of us and as a big show in Vegas or something, not something that bubbles up from the subconscious almost on a wide scale.
Yeah, but even on that, in that hypothesis, there would have to be some kind of breaking point.
Yeah,
but it's still this thing is bubbling up,
bubbling up to the point where so many people experience it that it's just, you know, and it affects so many people that people just can't ignore it, and they have to start looking at it. They might not know what it is, but they can't ignore it.
See, yeah, okay, but when I talked to you on your show, I kind of made this point, too. I don't think it has to – I like that idea, but I don't think it has to do – I don't think it is predicated on people having some kind of experience. I think it's just an educational process, too.
Well, it could be an educational process.
You know, like the more people – an acclimation process, you know, where people – because, you know, Bruce Rucks made a good point when we had him on the show. It's sort of like UFOs have kind of – they're starting to sort of – fall into this realm of people almost taking them for granted if they haven't been already, you know?
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, the UFOs, we don't know what they are. They're probably aliens. The government won't tell us.
Yeah, well, like, there's one, like, little door that's still closed where the people above you who tell you what to believe haven't said it's okay yet.
Mm-hmm.
And people need that. No matter who you are, I think people need that. Some people don't, which is fine, but most people need that. Like most people, I think more people accept that they're ghosts than the UFO. Reality or whatever behind a UFOs, because it's more personal to them and more personal to a lot of people. I think a lot more people have probably had some sort of ESP or ghost experience than a UFO one.
That's probably true. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's another one that where the, you know, they're waiting for the door to open somewhere saying yes, it's okay to believe in this because we have some sort of acceptable proof. And I think as far as UFOs are concerned, that's probably the one part of the paranormal where the acceptable proof part of the equation isn't going to happen for a long time. I think a lot, like I said on my show, a lot quicker would be ESP or hauntings than UFOs or maybe even Bigfoot might happen before that. But I have a whole different opinion on Bigfoot that has nothing to do with a physical being that's here, all that lives a normal life.
Don't tempt me to go down the Bigfoot road. We'll get in. I'm going to write this. Actually, I have some Bigfoot stuff in the notes, so we'll have to get into it.
I'm starting to babble, so you better bring me back to.
Yeah, I'm reeling you in. Don't worry. I realize it.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. Everything's going great. So that's the Jerusalem sighting, and I got a little flack last year from Red Pill Junkie, actually, a UFO mystic regular poster.
Yeah.
Because I said the Chinese sighting in China, we should dismiss it because it happened in China. And he thought that was like some xenophobic point of view. And I wrote to him and was like, no, the point of that, and I feel almost the same way about the Jerusalem sighting, but I don't know Jerusalem as well. But it's just sort of like, kind of like what you said, all the evidence we got out of there was really convoluted and stuff. As far as I know, there's no serious UFO group in Jerusalem that we know of that came out with any definitive sort of report on this. And
not yet.
And, you know, as I was saying to Red Pill Junkie, it's like in China, you know, anything that happens in China, I don't believe. Like, it's the same with, like, North Korea, you know. It's like, you know, they just... You can't trust anything that comes out of there, and I made the point to him that it's not xenophobic, because if something like that happened over, you know, like a nuclear installation or an Air Force base here in America, I'd say the same thing. Like, you can't believe anything that you hear coming out of that event, because, you know, they're totally covering it all up. I mean, you just look at the O'Hare thing.
Yeah.
That's like a real smaller version of that. But like any UFO that strays into, like, officialdom or, you know, a country where there's a real, like, lock on what people are told and are allowed to think, then, you know, you can't really trust any of the information that comes out of there. And I don't, like I said, I don't know much about Jerusalem, so all I know is no one's doing the work.
The Bernard Heche and his group's report on the O'Hare sighting said, and this was nothing to do with the government, was it's unexplainable, we can't really tell what it is, and that's it.
Yeah. So
at best it's unexplainable. You know, that's what we got out of that. So what the hell is, you know, officialdom probably love that. because they were just kind of ignoring it or sweeping it under the rug or whatever, and somebody actually looked into it, talked to the witnesses, looked at the weather reports, looked at the lighting at that time of day, looked at different, few different pictures, all that, you know, talked to the pilots and tower people, and they came up with, it's unknown. That's it. They didn't come up with, it's definitely aliens from somewhere, or this was a solid ship.
Yeah.
Structured craft. No, they came up with something very strange happened that we can't explain, and neither can a lot of people we talked to. Definitely wasn't mistaken. You know, as far as we can tell, it wasn't some natural or artificial thing mistaken for a UFO.
Right.
You know? And how far did that get us? All it did was, you know, a bunch of people believed in UFOs said, see? And a bunch of people that didn't said, so what?
Exactly. and you know, and just to beat up on sightings some more, just, you know, this thing... Hey, I said it's the annual bitch fest, but come on, you know it's you need a little. Sometimes
I'm trying to explain my position without saying I don't care.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. This is I feel like this is great because we can really explain.
Because I
how
don't
I feel about
care, but I have specific reasons why I don't, or not why I don't care, but why I ignore a lot of things because I'm not learning anything and it's nothing new.
Right, right. Well, the Jerusalem thing happened.
Just it till it hits me in the face, I won't recognize it. It's something new.
Well, the thing is with this, it happened in January. Here it is, January now, 2012. And it's like, I barely remembered this when I was doing the year in review list. And
oh, yeah, me too. I actually, like, vaguely paid attention to it at the time because I had this, you know, stupid, hopeless hope that maybe it was something, which it wasn't, so that knocked my hope and care down a little, even a little bit more.
No.
You know, I don't know. You know, you're going to have somebody on that says, you know, this is all totally exciting stuff. Yeah, it's exciting if you don't realize that nobody cares except you and a few UFO people. You know, when I get excited, it'll be when something that makes people outside the UFO community care on a sustained level in an important way and where you know, I can't remember whose phrase this is originally, but where serious people think about it seriously.
Right, right. Well, this just came to me now while you're talking. I think this is, you know, this is sort of, I guess I could call this a hopeful, you know, I don't know how I'd phrase this, but this is what I was thinking. It's like the Jerusalem sighting on its own, nah, I don't really care. But what really would be nice is whatever's behind this UFO, do the Jerusalem thing, you know, then show up in Beijing like a week later, then show up in another, you know, then I'll get excited, then I'll get interested if we can see some kind of like actual development. You know,
yeah, I don't think it'll happen.
Not, yeah.
Because if you know anything about the history of the subject and whatever's behind it, it is not logical at all.
Yeah.
At all, at all, at all. It doesn't do anything in any kind of logical order that we would expect, ever.
Well, it's interesting, too. I was thinking about this talking to Stan a few weeks ago. It's like, I know there's a ton of UFO sightings all the time, and MUFON gets them all the time, and Peter Davenport gets them all the time and everything, but, like, having read
and that's
countless...
that's fine, because I don't put down data.
No. But having read countless UFO books and history books and stuff like that, doesn't it feel like we're, you know, we haven't had a good flap in a long time?
No, not really.
That's disappointing.
It's all, you know, they're always fun, although, I said the Stephenville ones, they were interesting for about 2 weeks, and then I didn't care anymore because nothing was happening, except for there were some MIB things around it, which were kind of interesting, but that's happened before, too.
Yeah. I wouldn't even call the Stephenville thing a flap, really,
though. That's just porno, you know?
Yeah.
It's nothing that's going to get us anywhere. It's just something that's interesting to the interested people for a while.
Well, I'm calling for a good flap, that's all.
I will get right behind you with that one and vote the same.
Like a sustained one, you know, good 6 months, just like that would be fine. That would do something, maybe that would, you know, change people's minds.
Yeah, like over Norman, Oklahoma or something like that, like a sort of a bigger town.
Right, yeah, even if it was like a third-tier city, like Springfield, Mass., that's fine. If it lasts 6 months, that's good. We need more longevity than if
we need more people sitting out there making out in cars and going, ah! And getting down the road.
That's always a good thing. Well, what we're talking about, really, that's a good segue here into the next, the next contestant on the Price is UFO, which is exopolitics disclosure category. Because, you know, we're talking about, like, you know, this thing getting out and figuring out all about. And of course, there's people out there that that's their whole mission. You know, whether you agree with them or not, and whether you think it's a foolhardy task or not, that's, you know, well, we'll get into that. cause they've been.
Yes, I still do.
I'm also of the opinion. I'm also of the opinion that,
however,
we're not getting very far.
I did change one part of my opinion. If they can do it, that's great. Because that means the government will say, you know, oh, okay, well, we acknowledge that it's an issue and that there have been unknowns. I think that what they want them to acknowledge is that there's deals with aliens, and then Stephen Greer's thing about free energy coming from aliens and all this other stuff.
Yeah, they want like the whole, they want the whole fucking edible arrangement.
Or burrito or whatever it is. Enchilada. Yeah.
There you go.
They want the whole enchilada, and I think they think the enchilada is something that it isn't, or at least the government doesn't think that it is. And to be fair, I haven't listened to any of their military people telling their stories, because they're the same stories a lot of other military people tell, which is, I've seen some strange stuff and been told some weird things.
Yeah.
But I don't know what that adds up to. They think it adds up to aliens coming from other planets, and so do the military people. Aliens coming from other planets and structured craft. And like Valet says, I don't think it's that simple. In fact, it would be disappointing if it was that simple. And I think we've discussed this before.
I'm sure we have.
If something is admitted by the power structure, by the government, by whoever has control of the information, and it's exactly what you expect, how do you trust it?
How do you trust it anyway?
Yeah, how do you trust it? It's like, if somebody is saying what you want them to say, or saying what you want to hear, does that mean that it's true? I think that's a real big stumbling block with the disclosure thing, is that, what if the government tells them what they want to hear? Is that, you know, does that mean it's true? And I think if they did tell them what they wanted to hear, what a lot of people want to hear, it would be at the service of trying to change, you know, force people's opinions in a certain direction, not because the thing was completely true, or it be partially true, but using it as a tool of, you know.
It would be advantageous to them.
Yeah, of mass mind control. Mind control has bad connotations, but you know what I mean.
Right, right, right. Public relations almost. Yeah.
PR to get people to think in a certain way by admitting a little bit of something that either somebody wants to hear or is partially true or whatever. I think that's a very, very dangerous ground where you want somebody to say something. When they finally say it, you say, well, see? Like, I used to have a girlfriend, and before she would start arguing with me, and before she even started arguing, I'd realize the fight wasn't worth it. I'd say, fine, you're right. And she'd say, what? She'd get mad at me when I didn't, you know.
You didn't want to argue about it, yeah.
I didn't want to argue about it because I realized it was just wasn't that important.
So what you're saying, I guess.
What she wanted to hear. She wanted me to argue with her, to bolster her part of the, you know, her belief system or whatever. And these, I think a lot of the disclosure people want the government to say something to bolster what they, you know, a preconceived idea about what's going on because of hints they've heard. I don't know if they're right or not. They could be 100% right, and I'm full of crap, but it's, I don't think the UFO, anything connected with the UFO thing is as simple as people think it is. And I don't know what it is either. I don't have the answer, but if you look at it for any length of time, it's just, it's never, you know, an obvious thing, and it never really conforms to any scenario, I don't think, unless you force it into one.
Right, right. Well, listening to this, I was...
We don't see UFOs coming from other planets, but we assume that's where they're coming from.
They don't even need planets.
No, well, I don't think they do. That's a very important thing. I don't think they need anything except our ability to perceive them.
Interesting. That's an interesting thought. Do you think they need that, though?
Well, I think
it's kind of a byproduct of them fucking around in our sky.
Nobody's there to hear it. It's kind of irrelevant.
Yeah.
But, you know, and that's what this consciousness is. I think it's kind of like that where the creation story, from different cultures, there's the gods or the god or whatever created everything so it would have something to compare itself against. Otherwise, you're just like formless consciousness floating in space.
That's true, yeah.
And maybe whatever these things are, and I think I might be borrowing from people, I might even be borrowing from abduction researchers and Strieber and stuff. I think whatever this consciousness is, it needs us to define itself. Or maybe, you know, in the middle of our interaction is what the definition is, at least for them. And it, you know, just being themselves is not very interesting, but interacting with some other consciousness in some way that we can understand it, i.e., aliens from other planets or a structured craft coming in from other planets, then that's what's used. And it may not even totally be their fault that it's being used. It might be our consciousness latching on to what we expect, and they say, okay, fine, that's how we're going to interact, and that's fine.
This is interesting. You're really, you complimented me on some deep thinking on your show. I'm returning the favor now. You've given me pause here to think about this.
Well, see, it's not that I don't care, but I care in a different way than other people do, than some people do. There's other people that care in the same way that, you know, Nick and I and Mac at the time and Chris O'Brien to some extent, a few of the people I know, we kind of like bounce each ideas off each other, and they're not original ideas. They're not mine, you know. It's just I've come to realize by talking to people and reading things and being exposed to stuff that this seems to make more sense than aliens from other planets, or at least, and this is very important, it's more fun.
Well, that's true. Well, I was thinking this as you were talking about this, though. Well, I think you'll agree with me on this, is that, you know, I don't think the UFO phenomenon is one thing in general. Like,
I like to
think that it's more maybe like birds, you know, and the, you know, to take the analogy further, like the disclosure people think that, you know, maybe the Americas or United States, you know, cut a deal with crows, but there's still all the other birds out there that are doing something else, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
maybe
yeah,
it's,
I do.
You know,
know
the blue
mean.
Jays could be the ones that are abducting us, or, you know, and then there's like, you know, a whole bunch of different kinds of birds. Same as like insects kind of thing, you know? It's like we just don't, you know, we just, they're from all different places.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it's that's great. You know, I haven't heard that in exactly that way before. That's a really good analogy. The fact that I can still care on a certain level, I still do care. But if somebody asks me, what do you think about Emma Woods? That's so far off the map of what I'm interested in that it turns into I don't care.
Right, right. You don't have to justify, you don't have to justify your perspective because you're in good company here. All the people who are outraged by it.
Plenty of people
aren't even
mad about, well, why don't you care? It's like, well, I... not care doesn't mean, you know, screw off, you people are stupid. It means I don't care.
Exactly. And here's why. And we're explaining it to people. So, you know. Well, we went way down the rabbit hole of disclosure, but the thing I was going to bring up as the big disclosure story of the year was the big the petition, the dueling petitions. For people who are listening to this like 10 years from now, there was a petition to the White House that said... to release, I don't know the exact wording of it, so go to Wikipedia in 2022 and look it up. But they made a petition that said, like, give us your information on extraterrestrials. The government and the White House, like, had some science guys say that they've had no dealings with extraterrestrials. And it was a really sort of legally sort of answer where there was a lot of kind of, like, loopholes in it. And I think it said, like, we are covering up there's nothing secret or something like that.
Yeah, well, it also has to be in the way that they ask the question, too.
Right, right. And then this was the interesting part, and I think you mentioned this to me when we were talking a few weeks ago. Then the government, then the UFO folks, the ufologists, they dug up, like, some manuals from, like, 2008 for jet pilots that are like, what to do if you see a UFO? And they were like, well, why do you, what's this all about? And then the government took out the section on UFOs and redacted it from the manuals. So it became kind of an interesting turn of events. And then there's now a reworded petition.
Yes, I saw that.
That they're trying to get sent to the White House again. So, I mean...
Oh, no, I saw the redacted thing, and I just thought, this is like the 1950s all over again.
Right.
And the 1960s, and the 1960s, you know, it's the same thing happening over and over and over again, and we're going in circles, and, you know, the people that have put out the petition may have a point, but they're not going to get to their, you know, they're asking certain questions, they want certain answers to, and the government is going to do the same damn thing it's always been doing.
Right. Oh, now that I'm thinking of it, the second...
You said the game has changed some other way.
The second petition, I think is aimed towards getting sort of like a new blue book type department created to investigate UFOs. I think. I'm not positive.
Yeah, that's going to happen with all this money that's floating around right now.
I know, actually. Now that you mention that, I'm surprised... I'd be very surprised, given that they want to like cut Social Security and everything.
Well, I just heard Leon Panetta came up and said, "Yeah, we're going to cut a lot of the military budget. We're going to start cutting the fat out of the military budget." You think there's going to be anything left for UFO study, at least in a way that's, you know, public relations or whatever you want to call it, the Blue Book was? No.
Oh, right. You're not going to. Even if the government was flush with money, I don't think you'd get a fair and honest assessment. But what I think, to go back to something that you said earlier, I can kind of get behind that idea, and also the idea, as you said earlier, about that the UFO subject sort of like this door that people need sort of permission to like be allowed to think about, and I can get behind that as a form of disclosure, but not like some grand story about aliens and Roswell and everything. Like I can get behind government disclosure in the sense that they're like what you had said earlier too, you know, hey, we've seen these things, we don't know what they are. You know, at least, you know, they're a mystery to us or something like that, to give permission to academia and the media to sort of investigate
them. Well, then there's also deeper stories like Leonard Stringfield that uncovered of, you know, crash retrievals and all the stuff that Ryan and Bob Wood talk about. And, you know, how true are those? And are those extraterrestrial? You know, they might not even be extraterrestrial. Maybe the things disappeared after they picked them up, literally, physically. I don't know. I think there have been crashes of unknown, you know, there's very good evidence. There's been crashes of unknown technology. Now, does that mean it came from outer space? Why should it mean that? You know, that's what I said about the, you know, be careful what you're asking for, because you've already framed the answer by asking it in a certain way.
Right.
Yeah, I think these things happen, but I just think that the focus of them is too narrow. And the way that people ask officials for permission to have everybody else believe them are the wrong questions. In fact, I don't think you should even ask them anymore.
Well, they're not going to, yeah.
Look, the subject looked even sillier, I think, when the government just says, oh, no, nothing going on. It's like, all they say is, see, they're covering something up. And, you know, most people think, yes, they're covering something up.
Yeah, that's the funny part about, you know, like
about
I said,
most. I mean, there's
how UFOs,
a lot of people don't even care about the subject, but
right. But it is weird. There's a sociological thing behind it all. Like you kind of pointed out earlier about this, people needing permission to think about it and stuff. Because it's right. The people, you know, I think a good percentage of the American people just assume the government's covering it up and don't go any further.
Right.
There's no sense of outrage or anger or anything over it. You know, it's like acceptance.
It's kind of a thing that's pushed to the back of the closet that once in a while when you're cleaning up, you see it.
Yeah, like you're flipping the channels through and you catch a UFO thing on TV in your life.
Yeah, and some people are really into it, and you know, and some, but I think most people just don't, you know, it's not really part of their daily thought process or even weekly. And even if it was, you know, that's the other thing, if there is some kind of disclosure, people are saying there'd be all this panic and all that. But the thing is, after, you know, what would people do? They'd freak out, they'd say, oh, there's no God, or whatever the hell it is.
Still got to go to work on Monday.
Yeah, they still got to go to work on Monday. We have talked about this. And they would get used to it. It doesn't
yeah.
mean there's going to be aliens coming from somewhere every week to say hi to everybody. I don't think it would change that. It would just mean that that's just something that people have in their worldview right now, which is just a very small minority of us right now, you know, you and I and people that even care more about sightings and all that. I think about it a lot. You think about it a lot. But what if the government revealed, or whoever revealed, and scientists said, yeah, there are some sort of extra human beings that interact with us, and we don't know where they're from. There'd be a period of freak out, and then two or three or whatever years later, if nothing really happened to change the society, I don't think people would care anymore.
Well, that you this is an amazing conversation. That you just said something that made me think of this, too. It's just like, how maddening would it be if the government said that and the UFO phenomenon was still as elusive and mysterious and difficult to study and grasp as it is?
I think it would be.
Without them telling us, that would make it worse almost, I think.
Yeah, it would, because everybody's like, well, we got to get some scientists on this. To do what? You can't go out and see, you know, and grab a UFO and start taking pictures of it. It just doesn't work that way.
Right. It takes two to tango.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
it would be funny. It would be maddeningly also kind of funny. Like, you know, it's like everyone accepts UFOs are real. We still can't do anything about it. We can't get them.
That's the other reason why I don't think anything's admitted. It's like, you know, we don't want to go through all the difficult bullshit in between of everybody freaking out and religious movements and churches getting mad and this and that, to find out that there's still nothing that can be done about it. So why bother? Just kind of sweep it under the rug until something, the game changes somehow.
Right.
We can't change it.
Till they decide that it's time to stop being elusive.
Yeah, I don't really care if the government admits, here we go, not caring. I don't care if the government admits it or not, because it's like we've just been saying here, and I haven't thought about it in this way, but I think that even if they did admit it, it wouldn't make any difference after a while. And all the UFO people, nobody would care about them as soon as the government admitted that. I mean, that's been gone over. I wrote about it, and then Nick wrote about it, and a few other people, and you know, all about the same time. You know, what if they do admit it? What's going on? It's really not going to...
Then we can finally get to the bottom of Bigfoot.
Long run, because there's nothing that can be done about it. And the other part is all the people, the whole entire UFO community would just be wiped out. There would be no more UFO conventions or anything. There wouldn't for a while. They'd come back after a while. But yeah, the whole UFO thing, because what are they fighting against anymore?
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a fringe group. A lot of people are in it because they feel that it's, you know, that it's a fringe group, and they like to feel ostracized and different and all that. You know, and I admit I did too at first, and now I just don't really care so much anymore.
I think if anything, it might also end up becoming like co-opted by the mainstream.
Yeah.
In a way that like we get, you know, we get pushed out by this, like, you know how like this geek chicness and comic books, you know, how comic
yeah.
books used to be like this underground thing, and now like everybody reads them and stuff, you know what I mean? It's like, hey, we'd be like, wait a minute, dude, we were talking about UFOs way back before all you people got interested in them.
And people would say, yeah, great, fine, shut up, geek.
Exactly, yeah.
Everybody knows about that crap. You know, it's like, Stephen Hawking says they're real, so who cares what you say?
Take that. Alright, so the next story, geopolitical, this was sort of a weird one. I couldn't really figure out what I meant last year by that term, or really what I mean now, but I put the, under that one. I found this story interesting. I saw it in one of the top tens. I forgot all about it. This thing with Nick Pope, do you remember this? Where he sort of like said that he was involved with spin and dirty tricks.
Yeah,
and ridiculed
he was so sorry that he did all that stuff because that was his job.
Right. I thought that was interesting. But then, now that I'm thinking about it, I kind of always figured that was the case anyway. So, you know, because he's sort of jokey in a sense, and I could see kind of that maybe that's why he got the job in the first place, because he has a good sort of personality like that.
Yeah.
You know? So, but now that I think about it, I want to talk to him and see what he has to say about all this, but it's an interesting perspective.
I have a great deal of respect for Nick.
Absolutely.
I really like him, and I really like his attitude.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. So I thought that was an interesting story, but there's not much
more to
it.
My favorite phrase of his, when he hears any UFO thing and he hasn't been able to check it out yet, his catch-all phrase is, interesting if true.
I like that. That's like the Stan Friedman gray basket.
Catch-all phrase.
Nice, yeah. So yeah, I thought that was interesting. But like I said, doesn't it stand to reason that the guy in charge of essentially the Blue Book of England would be involved in this, essentially what we expected to be done with the American Blue Book is, you know, sort of downplay the sightings and...
Sorry about it.
No.
Well, you know what, he can admit it and say, look, that was my job, I'm sorry if I fooled some people, but look what I've done since then. I think I've made up for the, my government work where I told people there was nothing to it by coming out of the government and saying, yeah, I think there definitely very, very definitely is something to it.
Right, it's like J. Allen Hynek.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, one of the conversion thing, you know?
Yeah. All right, that was really the only, you know, the Jerusalem thing's kind of geopolitical, sort of. I couldn't really come up with much else. And the next story's also the sad one here, the in memoriam part of the show where we remember people that died. The only one I had, because I really went through really quickly on the notes, folks, I apologize, was Bud Hawkins, of course, who passed away in the fall.
Yes,
or
and there was
summer.
A big roar on my show over that.
Because
first I had Peter Robbins on.
Mm-hmm.
We talked quite a bit about Bud and what he did and what Peter's work with him was. And then, or was that after? Anyway, and then one show I had Nick and Paul Kimball, and Paul said something about, like, he really didn't see that Bud Hopkins had contributed very much, or he had contributed in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's leading us down this path for a long time that really didn't amount to anything. It might have been dangerous psychologically for the people involved. I don't 100% agree with him. And I met, Bud a few times, talked to him. I'm not an abduction researcher. I had deep disagreements about the way he went about things, but I don't know, I'm kind of torn if abduction researchers actually hurt people. I think those people, the people, if they went of their free will to Hopkins, and who the hell is there besides UFO researchers and mental health professionals?
Yeah.
And I think a great majority of them, this is just a feeling, go to a mental health professional and just deal with it that way.
Because
most people don't have access to Bud Hopkins or, local abduction, therapists around. So I think that the people made the choice to go to him I used to get letters from people when I was doing the magazine saying, I think there's something going on in my life. I don't know who to talk to. And I say, find a psychologist or psychiatrist who is open open to listening to you and not making fun of you. If you can do that, do not go to a UFO abduction researcher. Don't. And I think, I think that's what most people do. Most people are probably scared to go to somebody that says, that is known for,
telling you you're
finding out that
kidnapped by aliens.
Where are probed by aliens.
yeah, exactly.
People want to hear that and they don't want to believe that, so they go to somebody else and see if they can deal with it that way. And maybe if they don't get the answers they want there or things aren't working out, then they go to, I think these people in a lot of cases were last resort for a lot of people. And, if they can find some peace that way, whether it's wrong or whatever, maybe that was okay.
Interesting.
I think it was misguided, but, if the person feels better, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I mean, we've reached the nadir of abduction research, I think, though, with the Hopkins death and obviously John Mack's death and, the scandal around David Jacobs. It's like the big three of abduction research for the last 20 years. They're like out of the picture pretty much, so.
Yeah, I mean, I went and saw David Jacobs speak once, and I, in the middle, at a MUFON meeting in Orange County, it's like in 94 or something, and in the middle of his speech, he said something that made me audibly guffaw. He said something about, it's absolutely clear that the aliens are here to, take over and, steal our DNA, and I went, and the everybody in the room turned around and gave me a bunch of people. It came around and gave me the dirtiest look.
Well, I just feel like I'm really an ardent, I guess, skeptic in a lot of ways about abduction in general. I guess the current story of what it is. I feel like it just kind of got off the rails when it got into, like, hybrids and all this other stuff. I mean, that may be happening, but mind, like, just can't.
Yeah.
For some reason, my mind shuts off at that point where I'm like, okay, this very well may be true, but we're getting into like the fantastical, and we need more hard evidence beyond these regressed memories and stuff.
Yeah. The funny thing is, mine didn't, because when Missing Time came out, I was like right on it. I was totally on board with it, and all Hopkins stuff, probably up to maybe the early to mid 90s. And I started to go,
Well, did the narrative start to change?
I got a little tired of it, and I thought that it had kind of extrapolated itself based on.
Yeah.
And Hopkins would tell you, and Peter told me this, that it's based on what people tell them. It's not based on something they made up or that they want to believe. It's based on what people have told them. And what, and sometimes to the point where somebody would tell them something, they hadn't cued them or told them anything in the first place, and they would come up with details that other people had given them, long before, who had never met each other. And to them that meant, well, yes, there's aliens coming from other planets taking our DNA and all that. And that's fine. It makes internal sense. But there's no way to, you know, there's no way to prove that externally. You can't ask an alien about it. You can't, nobody's had a camera in there while it's going on.
Right.
You know, it's just this, I think it's just based on belief of what people perceive. And internally, and maybe sometimes externally, I mean, other people see lights and other people in the house might have seen something, but I don't think it adds up to what they think it adds up to.
Exactly, exactly.
And like I said, it might, but I think it's, there's only, you only got half there, and we don't, that's not how people deal with evidence to try and make a, you know, most people deal with evidence to try and make their mind up about whether something's real or not. You can't just have a bunch of witnesses talking about something that almost nobody has gone through and nobody has taken a film or video of, you know?
Right, right, right. And, like, you could also kind of just say, you know, the government's crazy and sinister enough to grab a bunch of people and you know, implant this stuff in their minds to get this thing going somewhere. And
you know, that might be part of it, too.
It's like, based on the evidence we have, it could, that has just as much merit, I guess you could say, as the abduction narrative that we've heard all these years. So it's like, that's part of the problem. It's like, we haven't gotten any further in actually getting any sort of good evidence.
Yeah, this is why I gave a talk earlier in the year in Albuquerque, and I said, I think all abduction research, with the exception of, like, therapy for people who are having problems and need help, I think it should all be stopped for, like, 5 years. And it looks like it might be the way things are, at least on a popular scale.
Yeah.
But just, you know, go away from it for 5 years and come back with no preconceived ideas and just start collecting data with no preconceived ideas and with no fanfare and no books written, you know, and maybe some papers shared between researchers, so it doesn't turn into a cult, and it doesn't, I'm not saying that it was a religious cult, but you know what I mean. It doesn't turn into this internally regenerative thing, and that's in the media and books and all this stuff. I think that ruins anything. Any kind of publicity generates unwanted attention, kind of messes up the motivations and what people think they want to think and think that they're looking at. And before we did the show, I have to admit something, and I've never really said this on the air, and if I'm not an abductee or anything, but the way I think about things, and if you've talked to me for a while, you know this, but personally, anytime there's a whole bunch of people thinking one way and waving a flag, I'm immediately suspicious.
Yeah.
Even if they're right, you know, it just, especially when it's something that a lot of people haven't made a decision on yet, politically or anything, but it, especially in the UFO thing or the paranormal, there's a lot of people standing there saying, this is what it is. It's like, I have a deep distrust of it. It's just my personality.
Is that why it took you so long to get on board with Lady Gaga?
Yeah, actually it was. That was the main reason for that, yeah. So,
no, I know exactly what you mean, yeah.
My personality, and you know, if somebody says, well, this is what it is, I go, well, wait a minute. And I start looking for reasons why it's not, because I even do that with my own opinions. I'll jump in on the other side to see how if somebody tells me that they absolutely do not believe in anything having to do with the paranormal UFOs, I start telling them why they should be interested in it. And if somebody tells me they're all totally into it and they're all new aged out, I start giving them the skeptical, scientific point of view just to see where it goes. Because otherwise it's not interesting to me to stand around and agree with people.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm the same way in a lot of ways too.
Not to fight, but just to get ideas boiling and,
exactly,
and moving around.
The next section here, anything else about, I couldn't think of anyone else that passed away, so.
Well, there was Charles Hickson.
Okay. This is the guy with the UFO contact.
Pascagoula.
Yeah.
And the one that was very important to me, Gabe Valdez.
Okay. Now, did you know Gabe Valdez or no?
Yes, quite well.
Why don't you talk a little bit about him so we can remember him here?
When I was working on Project Beta in 2003, Bill Moore pointed me towards Gabe because Gabe had helped him out quite a bit. Actually, keeping a reality check on Paul Benowitz in a lot of ways. So I went out to Albuquerque twice. First time I went out there, I met Gabe, and he'd never met me before. I talked to him on the phone a bit. I went and met him at work, and the first time I met him, he just drove with me a little bit. He had to go run some errands he worked at the Ford dealer in Albuquerque, one of them. So he had to go run some errands for the Ford dealer, so I just drove with him and asked him questions. Cool guy, he was real nice, and he goes, well, why don't you come back tomorrow, I'll bring you some of my files. And boy, did he bring files. He brought like two giant boxes full of files.
Oh, wow.
Then he'd met me the day before. He put him in a room in an office, an empty office at the Ford dealer, and said, here, I got to go out and do some stuff. Go through this. Look at anything you want. Take pictures of everything you want. If you want to make copies, I'll make copies for you. And if you find anything you think is interesting, I'll talk to you about it. Then he left me alone with it.
Nice.
God, there was incredible stuff in there. And then, you know, over the years since that, you know, if something was going on, he was the guy that was the police officer in Dulce, New Mexico in the late 1970s, mid to late 70s when the cattle mutilation thing started. So he was there, like, when it started, at least the American version of it started, and he was on the scene at cattle mutilations, on the scene looking for evidence, finding strange things, seeing strange things, he shared all that information with me, a lot of it which didn't go in the book because it wasn't relevant, but I thought it was interesting. Since that time, every time I would go to Albuquerque, I'd call Gabe up and he'd say, sure, let's hang out. And he'd tell me a little bit more about what had been happening. And his wife and he would take us out to dinner and we'd just, you know, talk about normal stuff and hang out. He was just a really nice guy. And then this year, I think he was 67 or 68, died to sleep. So I went to his funeral in Albuquerque. And then he was buried up actually about halfway to three-quarters of the way up to Dulce in a little town up there. And I went to that part of the funeral, too, and watched them lower him into the ground. And then I went to the wake, and there was all this great New Mexican food people had made. And I talked to some of his relatives and his friends and his wife and his sons. And anyway, I think he's one of these people that not too many people know about, but I think he's real important in the history of kind of the weirdness in New Mexico and especially the cattle mutilation thing. And
now, what did he think of the Dulce Bay story?
He was always of the opinion that there was something there, but his opinion of what it was completely different from most people. His opinion was that it was some sort of research facility, maybe biological, and that the government drew attention to it to see who was interested, see who was coming to see what was going on there. And they deliberately told people, you know, Paul Benowitz and all these people that it wasn't a certain place. And it was. The thing's like 10 miles away, apparently, from where they said it was.
Yeah.
As far as I know. And that would make sense to me, too, because there's been, a stealth fighter crashed, I think, north of Bakersfield or something in the 90s. So I guess it leaked out that it had crashed, and all these people came running. So, of course, they had all these information leaks about where the crash was, which was miles away from the actual crash site.
That makes sense, yeah.
So if you really want to see it, why don't you go out to this place? And people would go out there, and there was, there was like a pile of junk, or maybe there was nothing, or whatever. And people are running all over looking for the thing while they're cleaning up the real crash site.
It's like how they catch Russian spies.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's what was going on there. And I didn't think there was any base there. And Gabe, actually, he was the one that tried to convince me that there was. Because I was so involved with the Paul Benowitz thing and thinking that it was a fake. He in various ways, which I cannot go into on the air, tried to convince me and made a convincing case that there was some sort of a base there based on who had been there, who he had talked to, what was going on in the tribe internally, the Hickory Apache tribe.
Oh, wow.
And some other things. And then I got confirmation of it from some guy that I just, like, basically almost met out of the blue. I mean, there was no way unless somebody steered him to me, which I think is kind of ridiculous. And he said, yeah, there is or was a base there. And this was a guy that worked for the Department of Defense in the 80s. So, you know, it gets weirder and weirder and deeper and deeper. And Gabe was at the center of that. And anytime there was anything going on in Dulce, if I called him up, he would tell me exactly what was going on right up to that minute. And if I was interested to do something about it, he'd give me more information.
Nice.
So I was very sorry and shocked when I heard that he died. Norio Hayakawa actually told me, and then I hopped on a plane in the midst of having no job and went out there to the funeral.
That was nice of you.
Well, I don't even know why I mentioned that. I just really thought it was important that I go out there and talk to his one of his sons actually has the information, and he's keeping it, because I thought that was the main thing I was going to ask him. He's like, are his papers just going to get thrown away? Or
yeah.
I didn't bring it up. I thought it was rude of me to bring that up. So I didn't. I just hung out and you know, bowed my head when everybody else bowed their head and you know, talked quietly about how cool Gabe was and what a really cool guy he'd been to me right off the bat without even knowing me. And then his wife brought it up when I was about to leave. I went over and said, you know, once again, I'm so sorry about Gabe. I'm going to miss him terribly, and I'm glad I had a chance to come out. And then she brought it up. She said, if you want, we're not going to throw out any of his papers. You know, one of my sons is taking care of it, and pointed him out, and I went and talked to him.
Nice, nice. That's good to know.
And, you know, instead of being rude, she brought it up herself, which I thought was very nice.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, we'll move.
Anyway, in a convoluted way, I just wanted to say that of all the people that died during the year, I think to me that was the most important person for me personally.
Oh yeah, and, sure yeah.
There was so much more that could have been done with Gabe alive, but you know, it's one of those things where there's certain researchers that have so much stuff that nobody's ever seen that could be game changers.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, that is true.
You know, I think probably Bud Hopkins was sitting on a lot of that stuff that he might have ignored because he thought it wasn't important. Or Linda Howe has a bunch of stuff, I bet, that nobody really knows about, and she might have even forgotten about, and she might not even know that it would be a game changer if she did something with it. You know, you never know.
Right, that's true, yeah.
And then there's these people like Gabe or Tom Adams, who was one of the first mutilation researchers, or Gary Massey, who was another one, or Ron Regier, he's another one with tons of information that people ought to, you know, these people ought to get out there and let people see their information, utilize it, because it might expand our idea about what's going on.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we'll move to the next thing on the list here, and that's the inside baseball story of the year for ufology. Which I have a feeling you probably, well, I don't know, we talked a little bit about this back when it kind of went down, and that is, I thought it was kind of a sad story, this whole thing with the Phil Imbrogno scandal and how Phil Imbrogno, there are allegations, let's just say, because Phil hasn't said anything about this, as far as I know, publicly, but there's allegations, that pretty strong allegations, let's say, that...
I think it was pretty conclusively proven that he had lied about his some of his academic credentials.
Okay, I didn't know how far I could take that, so...
Yeah, what's his name? Lance Moody, I think, found this out.
Yeah, yeah, that he lied about his academic credentials, didn't go to MIT, yeah. A whole bunch of stuff, and it was quite the... Quite,
I mean, if he thought he could answer it and the guy was full of crap, I think he would have tried to defend himself.
Right, right.
I would. Anybody would, you know?
Yeah, and this went down in the summertime, and he's been MIA, like, ever since, and it's
yeah, we're left to say that, well, yeah, the guy lied about a lot of the stuff in his background.
Right, right. Which, as I said, caused quite a stir in UFO circles. Obviously, nobody outside of ufology cared a lick about the story, but for those of us who are into the study of the phenomenon, it was surprising. Well, not, you know, the weird part is it wasn't surprising, being that it's ufology and human nature, I guess you'd say, too, but at the same time, it was surprising because it was Phil Imbrogno, I had a lot of respect for him, and it was just like, oh, dude, like, why'd you do that? That's kind of my reaction. You know, there was some there was, of course, the UFO lynch mob that wanted to just, like, string him up, and there was a lot of anger and stuff, but my attitude was more just disappointment and, like,
blah, blah, blah. Let's get all excited about something because, there's, you know, we got to make up some excitement. It's so stupid. I mean, because they think they're right on the edge of some sort of respectability. They're not. And the other thing is Phil Imbrogno was, like, on the fringe of that. His ideas weren't very mainstream at all.
Nah, he was just sort of... Well, that was partially the additional, like, disappointment, though, because I remember I talked to you, like, before all this went down, and I might have even been on your show where it was like, you know, I'm really excited about what Phil Imbrogno's doing right now, and now it's like everything he... You know, I almost can't even go and look at his stuff right now, and eventually I will.
It doesn't bother me in the least. I'll still look at his stuff. Because,
you have to look at it with a jaundiced eye, right? I mean, come on. Like, personal anecdotes that are in the story, yeah. I think a lot of those.
Yes, I was kind of wondering when I was first reading some of the stuff, like him being in the jungle in Vietnam and having some, like, Yeti-type thing running around in the rain yelling at him.
I don't remember that one, but, I bet he did just spin a bunch of yarns in these books.
Yeah, I think it was in the Files from the Edge. I think that's what that's called. Anyway, but the point was, the reason that I don't really, once again, I don't care about his fall from grace is because I liked his ideas. I liked his theories. I don't care if he made, I think John Keel made up a bunch of crap. But that doesn't bother me. In fact, I know he did in a couple of cases. But I don't care. I really don't, because I like the thought process, and I like the thinking, and I like the theorizing. And people can say, well, it's theorizing based on made-up bullshit. No, not all of it's made-up bullshit. I mean, he had to go out and study these things and talk to people. I mean, the guy wasn't just an armchair guy. He went out and talked to people. He went out and investigated stuff. He went out and, you know, gathered information and was in the field.
Right, right. Well, like the point you made...
I would still like to have him on my show, but, you know, he's not going
to
do it.
Oh, I know. I'm begging him, you know, to come on VOA. It's like, you know, come to Jesus, Phil. Just, you know, say what you got to say. Get it off your chest. If you did this, just...
Yeah, in fact, I would say if I wanted to contact him, we don't even have to talk about that.
See, that's all I want to talk about right now. Is
really?
Like find out what... Well, I guess, to me, what fascinates me about the story is...
Well, it would be the only way to get him on if probably say, look, we're not going to talk about the controversy,
true, yeah.
Your ideas.
Well, because, like, it just fascinates me the thought process of why he would do it. You know what I mean? If, you know, I just feel like that to me is, like, why would you do that, dude? That's kind of my,
sort of like when
Hugh Grant went on Jay Leno there. I don't know if you remember that. He was just like,
yes, I do.
Yeah, he was just like, the first question was like, well, what were you thinking? You know? That's kind of my, you know, that's the first question I'd have for him, dude. Like, Phil, what were you thinking, man?
That was a sexual scandal. Phil was, like, you know, lying about academic credentials. Which
right.
In a lot of people's minds, a lot more serious because you trust somebody. If somebody has academic credentials, you trust their information. You trust that they're a diligent researcher, all that other stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't, you know, I still trust that he was a diligent researcher, but I also, you know, I also know that a lot of it was weaved in with crap he made up. Probably. If he made up stuff about himself, obviously he's probably made up a lot of other stuff too.
Right.
It was in
right.
service of some of his ideas, and the ideas were based on research that he'd done. And if he had to make, he wanted to make up stuff to bolster it, like a contactee or something. So I, you know, like I said, I don't care about the controversy. What I care about is ideas and his theories and his connecting of fairy lore and Middle Eastern jinn lore and all that to the intelligences or whatever they are behind the UFO thing. I think that's important, and the way he looked at it looks at it still, I suppose, is still valid to me.
Right, right. Well, like what you're saying, too, is and what we talked about way back when this all went down, is just that, like you're saying here, is that the ideas are still valid. Nothing changes.
Still excite me. I don't care if he lied about his background.
It's just...
I'm sorry that he did.
Indeed.
You know, so now there's zero chance that his ideas are going to get in the mainstream instead of 0.00001% chance.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He's not going to be on Oprah now.
Yeah.
Well, the funny part is, it's like he was in the New York Times, like right before this all, you know, about a year before it all went down. So
was he?
Yeah. And they didn't even uncover all that. So kudos to Lance Moody for digging into it. But, you know, by that same token, there was also sort of like this backlash where it was like, people should have caught this. And it's like, you know what? Fucking New York Times should have caught it, man. Like, don't hold me to the standard. They're at a higher standard than all of America. So, you know, they should have caught it. They're getting paid to, like, write about this stuff. So they're the paper of record, and apparently, according to them, he's on the up and up. So
apparently their record was wrong.
Exactly.
Open or skipping or something.
The mystery missile off the coast of California. Something or nothing.
I have a great fear that this is really something. The United States government has come out and said, and not quite definitively enough for me, said that this was probably. That is their word, probably an airplane. Probably doesn't make it. We both watched the event. I think this could be aliens.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
And this is, it's very scary. The other thing, the missile went up. When does the missile come down? More importantly, where does the missile come down?
You were putting a call to President Blair Underwood. I knew that you would think
that's right.
that these beings were like
that's
94%
right.
human airflying.
Well,
no,
comes down
this
on
is
your
nothing.
Head.
This is a movie promo out of Southern California.
Oh, no.
That's all it is
a
marketing campaign.
Reality?
It is nada.
Absolutely
nada.
Wilbon's right. It's falling off the table there. The missile's nothing. Wilbon gets the win. This was definitely something.
I hate this game.